Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Good afternoon, everybody. Am I on?
You're on.
I'm on. Okay.
You're on.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. We're on time. We're actually rolling when we're supposed to here. This is crazy.
Cricket silence. Paul gives me a hard time about not being here sometimes on time, and he has to call me in and hunt me down, whatever. You know, it's mañana, man. It's Southern California, where I'm always 2 minutes away.
That's right.
But we are here on time. I was really excited about the show, actually. I mean, we've had, like, just a stellar cast this month, and now it's like, oh, my God, I set the bar for January high.
Yeah.
I got to match it for February, but you know what? Challenges are good things. I have a gentleman in front of me that I was very excited to get here and talk about it. And it wasn't planned, but especially with news in the last couple of days, it makes it even more, I think, timely. Dr. Josh Luke, who basically I'm going to let him introduce himself, but it's phenomenal. I mean, I love the fact, Josh, by the way, that you didn't even go down the path to be in healthcare to begin with. Right. And we say it on the show all the time that people that find themselves, more so maybe we refer to it as in terms of senior care. Right. But I think it applies also in terms of care in general, is that a lot of people have a personal story that brought them to that. That, you know, nobody really sometimes, I shouldn't say nobody's, most people don't wake up in the morning and go, I'm going to go basically do, you know, senior care. I'm going to work for O'Connor Mortuary. You know, that sometimes there's a life journey. Something happens. Something affects us close by. And we find ourselves in that position where we want to be of service to others, maybe in our own way. So thank you, first of all, for being here.
You're welcome. Excited to be here.
Yeah. And I'm glad you wore the SC. I was wondering whether you're going to wear SC.
Fight on.
Fight on colors. But why don't you give people a little bit of background? Just fascinating background. I mean, like I said, you didn't start off in healthcare. You found yourself, or you made actually the conscious decision to pursue that at some point,
yeah,
right?
For sure.
And then it just kind of, you're just taking that journey. It's like a journey, right? You're just like, what's next? So why don't you give people a little bit of background about yourself?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on the show, for starters. So I'm OC for life. I always tell my wife that. I grew up here. I graduated from El Dorado High School in Placentia, grew up in the city of Brea. My parents still live up in Olinda Village in North County. My wife and I live in Yorba Linda. My kids are at El Dorado. So I always joke with my wife that, you know, I'm 714 for life. So if they if they move our area code, I'm going to have to move. So, and I love all the everything about the OC. And some of the story that you referred to is personal to the OC as well. So let me just go through that real quick so people can get a feel for who I am and why there's so much timely information taking place for businesses and families right now about healthcare and affordability. You know, my story starts as a high schooler. My two older brothers were professional athletes. That's a lot of pressure for a kid, an Orange County kid. I realized that God had blessed me in so many ways in high school, but one of them was not to be a professional athlete like my brother Matt, who many of you know played for the Dodgers and Angels back in 98-99. My older brother Scott, who was the youngest American to complete the Ironman triathlon even before that. So, but what I did is I set my sights on working in sports marketing. Mm-hmm. And I love sports. I grew up in a sports family and was able to, within a couple years of graduating from a master's degree from Cal State Fullerton, had actually already worked for all four major sporting professional leagues.
Wow.
And a PGA Tour event, and really was well on my way when another Orange County resident, Mark McGuire, decided to break home runs, the Major League Baseball's home run record. And I was working at a marketing and PR firm in Irvine. And his agent called us and said, can you help, man? He's had so much attention since he broke that record in just a couple weeks afterwards. I just need somebody to help me manage his marketing. Mm-hmm. And that just filled my Rolodex up so quickly. I mean, I was 26 years old. I was living my dream. I ended up going on a private jet with Mark and some friends to New York to take him on a media tour, the David Letterman Show, the Today Show, the Rosie O'Donnell Show, if you remember that. We went to Time Magazine. It was just an unbelievable 6 months to really, you know, and it, what was interesting is Mark's a great guy, amazing guy. He didn't really want PR and media, but what we helped explain to him is, hey, if you can just give us a day or so, we'll make sure that you're being portrayed in a positive light. Because right now it's kind of Sammy Sosa's this jovial, lighthearted person, and that would make you the obvious choice to be the not jovial person. But Mark ended up doing a great job bringing himself, humanizing himself, and really showcasing the child abuse charities that he'd started.
Sure.
We actually positioned him with Time Magazine as Man of the Year, and he actually made the cover of the magazine that year. It said his name on there, but the Person of the Year that year wasn't really a positive thing. It was more of a negative, and so they portrayed Mark McGuire as Hero of the Year, which is pretty cool. And you know, I haven't seen Mark or talked to him in years, but that was an amazing experience, and it certainly set my career on its path. But it was actually on that private jet on the way back from New York on October 20th of 1998. I remember that because I got married on the 17th and left 2 days later with Mark, with my wife. Mark was gracious enough to say, you know, hey, I know I'm interrupting your honeymoon, so why don't you bring your wife to New York with us? And it was on that private jet on the way back, the last time I've ever been on a private jet in my life. I never even imagined I'd be on a private jet. But I looked across at my wife of just, you know, 3 days at the time and said, wow, isn't this amazing? I just married the woman of my dreams. I'm living out my career dream. But really, my perspective had changed just in that prior 2 weeks, even though I had gotten married and done this amazing media tour. Getting married really changed my perspective on what my priorities were.
Sure.
And I started thinking a lot about having a purpose in life beyond just sports and sports marketing. Not that those aren't valuable, but I love them. But was I really making a difference in this world?
How old were you, John?
I was 26.
Wow.
It was only 1998. And I was sitting there going, private jet, Mark McGuire, I mean, you know, with all due respect, can I do any better in sports marketing? But the reality is, I wanted to do something where I felt like I was making a difference. I didn't know what that was, but I got my answer over the next few months.
And you felt that there was, you needed more, you think? Like a little bit more of a, for your contentment. I'm curious.
Well worded, because what I knew I needed more of was income in the long term, which I wasn't going to get in sports marketing.
Yeah, getting married will change that reality.
Yeah, though. But I also knew, hey, sports marketing's great, but I also worked for the Mighty Ducks of Anaheim back when they were the Mighty Ducks. I was an intern. And what you're exposed to as a sports information intern at Cal State Fullerton, as a intern for the Mighty Ducks, working at a PGA Tour event, doing a few events for the NFL Players Association, Major League Baseball, all these, I realized most of these people that have been in the industry 20 years aren't making a boatload of money. And look, I want to live in Orange County. I'm OC for life. I got to make some money.
Right.
And so that was kind of what drove it. But also my grandmother was sick. My grandmother, who had been close to my whole life, was in town the week of my wedding, and she just kept saying, man, I can't get a new wheelchair. I need a walker. I can't afford it. My insurance doesn't care for it. And then when I would call to my grandmother's caretakers to see how she was doing, they would say, oh, she went to the hospital a few days ago. I haven't heard. And then the hospital would say, oh, she left to go to a nursing home. And the nursing home would say, oh, we don't have the chart from the hospital yet. And I was blown away. As a 26-year-old kid who was just a sports marketer, you know, I was like, man, healthcare just seems completely unorganized, completely unaccountable. And really what kept me up at night was, how come my grandma can't afford a wheelchair or a walker? Her and grandpa both worked full-time their whole life. This doesn't seem to make sense.
And I think the duality of living professionally in that environment that you are, where you're flying on private jets and you're seeing all of that, and then having that also be part of your reality, I mean, I think there was a clash that happens there. I didn't do it from the sport perspective, but I worked for firms that were doing, you know, 5-star hotels and resorts, and we were like literally airdropped on halfway across the planet to take care of stuff, right?
Yeah.
And you know, money was no object on these items. It was lavishness galore, right? And you saw people that were providing the service side of it as well, and you got off that plane after about a week of gone being in that kind of reality and the wine and dine and all this stuff with the clients. I'm just kind of fascinated by the fact that you were kind of blessed, I think, to at the age of 26, to have that not conflict, but that sort of reality challenge happen with you, where you're looking at things from a different perspective. Because 26-year-old person that basically is doing sports entertainment, I mean, you know, hey, how long can this ride go, right?
Yeah.
But it's amazing. So what happened when you saw that kind of? You were kind of, I would think, were you kind of angry and upset that your mom, your grandfather and grandmother were basically
dealing
with that reality?
There's no doubt there was some anger and some anxiety, you know, and I was living my dream. I was blessed. I mean, I don't want to ever make it sound like a negative. It really opened a lot of doors for me. It was the same year my brother debuted with the Dodgers, my favorite team. I grew up a Dodger fan, and the next year was with the Angels. So, I mean, I was right in the thick of it.
Sure.
you know, and I was seeing the business side of baseball in particular, but also I'd worked for all the other things. And actually, you know, I don't know if your listeners know this, but I'm a public speaker by trade. I speak now. And when you speak, it's about entertaining, engaging with stories, and leaving people with something that can improve their lives. And I know when I speak, I do that. But I also share that story of being on that private jet with my wife on the way up from New York, 4 days into my marriage. And I joked with her, I want to make a change. And she kind of looked at me like, did you lose your job? I said, no. She said, are you having a midlife crisis because you're only 26? And I said, no, my heart is telling me I'm being pulled to do something with more of a purpose. I'm not going to do it tomorrow. Right. I'm not going to quit my job. I just wanted her support and prayers and moving in a direction where I could have a career that made more of a purpose. And within about 6 months, I was teaching at a university, and I had a student come up to me towards the end of the semester and say, hey, I've heard you talk about wanting a career change. I've heard you talk about your grandmother and your frustration with her care. Mm-hmm. And we have an opening at our healthcare facility for someone, and I think you'd be great at it. And so I went and I got training at a nursing home, did that for about a year, 2 years, I should say, after I was done. And as I mentioned earlier, I got a call out of the blue about 3 or 4 years into my nursing home career from an old hospital that used to be open in Anaheim called Anaheim General Hospital. And the owner just said, hey, look, we've been through 5 CEOs in 5 years. This hospital's barely hanging on. There's no debt, so we really don't have a lot of bills to pay, but we don't want to close it. I mean, the community really wants it. The city of Anaheim didn't want to close it. But the five nursing homes across the street, literally across the street, driveway to driveway, had lost confidence. And they started driving past Anaheim General, going to two other hospitals. There was a new owner at those two hospitals. He was very aggressive. He's now one of the largest owners in the country for hospitals. I've learned a lot from watching his tactics. But at the time, they actually gave me my first job in hospitals as its CEO because they knew they needed somebody with a different perspective.
How old were you at that point?
I was 32 years old at the time. My first job in the hospital was as a CEO, as a small aging hospital. I'm not naive, so I said to them before I accepted the job, you know, what are you expecting from me? Give me some goals. They gave me four very specific goals, most of them about census, putting heads in beds, and quality. I was able to accomplish two of them within less than a month because I had those relationships from being in the community in Orange County with those physicians. The third one took me about 9 months, and the fourth one was about, you know, improving the quality and the amount of babies delivered, and that one never happened. It really probably wasn't the safest environment to deliver babies because we weren't what they call a level 2 or 3 neonatal intensive care unit. So in any case, I was very, very content with that. And just to kind of wrap this story up, after 4 years on the job there, if you remember Western Medical Center Anaheim, which is now called Anaheim Global, they reached out to me and said, hey, we need a CEO, and our doctors seem to think that you're the right guy. And I made the jump in, and largely because I felt like, hey, one organization gave me a chance, but they still were just kind of hanging on by the threads to keep that place open. Right. And really to be a permanent fixture in healthcare, a young up-and-comer, I know I'd earned my stripes, but I figured somebody else saying, hey, this guy's capable of being a CEO is the right move.
Yeah.
And I was really honored to be the CEO of Western Medical Center in Anaheim, and there were two main reasons for that. Number one, they were the county hospital. Not by name. Nobody's ever said that. But when UC Irvine kicked away all the, and with all due respect to UCI Medical, this is what they did in the 90s and around the millennial, is they got rid of all the bad business from the county. Psychiatric business and the jail contract, and they kicked it over to Western Medical Center. And you might not realize this, but Western Medical Center Anaheim's only about a mile and a half from UCI Medical Center. I could see it from my office.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, a lot of people I don't think realize that. And so, how long were you there for?
I was there for 3 years. A new owner came in, and my wife always jokes, you know, I love it when you get fired from a hospital CEO job because they pay you for a year, and you get to coach Little League and make a full-time income. So as a man whose responsibility is to support the family, I really didn't see it that way, but she didn't say that till after it was over, but I always found a little humor in that.
So and you're talking 90s, you're talking late 90s, you're talking about, you know, right in the middle of it, where the system was being strained, the system was being, you know, broken up, business was being sent from one person to the other, they were starting to specialize in what they focused on and marketing, as far as marketing, and it was this very, very for-profit model that was going on, right?
Sure.
And it was supposed to work, but it hasn't. Being nice, it hasn't worked as well as it should have worked, right?
Sure.
So from the insider's perspective, Josh, what was wrong with the system Why was it sort of doomed to be challenged like it is?
So great question. You know, so my new book called Health-Wealth, so it's called Health Wealth, is Healthcare Bankrupting Your Business, 9 Steps to Financial Recovery. I was really honored that a lot of your listeners, in fact, because a lot of folks here in Orange County, helped make it a number one bestseller on Amazon on launch day on the 18th of January. We talk about this. So part one of the book is about what I call a system broken beyond repair. And I believe that to be true. And I believe that yesterday Amazon proved that by saying we're getting rid of our insurer and we're starting over.
Talk about a disruptor piece of news yesterday, right?
Yeah, and that's really what my whole book is about, is a system broken beyond repair. And chapter 2, and Forbes Books printed this book, they published it, and they called me after they read chapter 2 and they said, well, the name of the chapter is The Villains of Greed. And I said, well, who are the villains of greed? And they said, everybody you wrote about, hospital CEOs, doctors, big pharma, and all the middlemen in healthcare that are just running up the score because there's no transparency. And that grew on me because I realized it was accurate. And so the prior reimbursement model, when I teach at USC, there's the first lesson I give in my graduate class.
And what do you teach at USC?
I teach a public policy on healthcare policy at USC. I've been there about 3 years. I designed a course for them at their request on healthcare transformation, going from the hospital to the home. Because really the point of this, Rod, is that population health and you taking care of yourself at home is never going to be the priority of American business and corporate America so long as hospitals are wagging the dog, so long as health insurers are wagging the dog. Because big electronic medical record companies control hospitals. They're not incentivized, nor is the hospital, to help you live healthier. There is no incentive for them whatsoever to do that.
Well, I heard you say one time, heads on beds, right?
Heads and beds. So that's the fee-for-service model. So let's say, and this is the 30-second lesson I give my students at USC. As a hospital CEO, I hire a group of emergency physicians to staff my emergency department. Yep. I send out a request for proposal. What do you think I'm looking for in their proposal? It's only one thing. Who will put the most heads in my hospital beds, because that's how I get paid?
I bill.
So now that you have heard that directly, let there be no doubt that you don't go to the emergency room to be evaluated. You go as a widget for them to justify and run as many tests as they can so they can bill for them to justify admitting you to the hospital to put your head in their bed. Shame on all of us for thinking we were actually going there so the doctor could evaluate us and hopefully send us home. That is his or her last priority, is to send you home. So the Affordable Care Act, like it or not, was an effort to flip that on its head. And for those of you who lived through the 80s and remember when we first heard the term HMO and it was such a bad word, well, that's what the ACA is. It's just a different variation of an HMO. It's managed care. It's trying to incentivize people for keeping individuals healthy and at home. So, yeah, Rod, heads in beds is the model. The model's being turned on its head and has nothing to do with you being healthy. And when you read Health Wealth, is Healthcare Bankrupting Your Business, you're going to read about this system broken beyond repair and how the hospitals are in this time of transition and they don't like it at all. They're losing their power position. Remember how cool the quarterback was in high school?
Yeah.
And then like the week after he graduated, he realized nobody cared anymore. Well, the hospital CEO is now the quarterback that's graduated. And they're trying to hold on as long as they can. Interestingly enough, so this interview, we're being taped today, January 30th, 2018. From about January of 2017, when I got interviewed as I was preparing this book, I often talked about the only companies that can change healthcare affordability and drive it down. There's 5 or 6 of them. So you have Apple, you have Microsoft, you have Amazon, you have Facebook, you have Google, which is now called Alphabet. They can all make a difference, and they've all dabbled and they've tried. So fast forward a year since I've been making that talking point.
Right.
The reason I say that is because you, Rod, and everybody else has to become an EHC, an engaged healthcare consumer.
Absolutely.
As long as the hospital's in charge, that won't happen.
Right.
Google can make that happen. Amazon, Microsoft, Apple can make that happen. And in the last week, here's what's awesome. My book came out 2 weeks ago, January 18th, became a bestseller because people can't afford it. Healthcare is bankrupting America, right?
Yeah, this affects everybody. I mean, everybody should be reading your book.
A week later, Apple says, hey, we're going to take charge of this. We're giving a personal app for everybody, and we force the hospitals to play by our rules. So they're going to give you your data. Is that crazy that you, if you want your personal health information, call the hospital? A, they're going to charge you. B, they're going to tell you it's going to take a week, and they're going to make you feel like, well, shame on you for doing this. You don't trust us? So the second thing that happened, and it happened yesterday on January 30th, is Amazon, the most powerful company of all, came out, and they partnered with, and sure. I love that it's Berkshire Hathaway,
yeah,
because you have Warren Buffett's name,
yep,
attached to it.
Yep.
And he, in my book on page 10, is quoted as saying healthcare is the tapeworm that is destroying the American economic system.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that again yesterday, and I had about four people quote on social media, hey, he said this exact same thing on page 10 of Dr. Luke's book. I'll read it to you word for word here. Forget taxes. Warren Buffett says the real problem is healthcare. He told the New York Times that at the Berkshire Hathaway meeting in May of 2017. And he said that and followed it up with healthcare is 5%. It was 5% of the gross domestic product, and now it's 17%. And that's just, in 50 years, it's changed by 12%.
Yeah.
He went on to say that medical costs are the tapeworm of American economic competitiveness, and this pretty much sums up the problem, doesn't it? And he's got a little more credibility than me, I think. So the fact that those two things, Apple and Amazon, two of those five or six companies that have the muscle to force hospitals out of the power position, to enable you and I and everybody else to become EHCs, engaged healthcare consumers,
mm-hmm,
that has started, and I love the fact that in the last 2 weeks it's happened. And I would love to give you a little more on EHCs, but that's a long answer, so do you want me to go right into it?
What we're going to do is we're going to take a break. I want to come, when I come back, we want to do that, and I also want to talk about how it never in my mind made sense to be on this model that we were on, that the writing was on the wall, and we've just been ignoring it because the alternative, which is preventive, which is wellness driven, is not only kind of a feel good California, you know, left coast basically fruits and nuts kind of mentality. It's also financially viable, and it is the way to be financially sound. So we're going to take a break, and we'll come back.
If you are like the majority of Americans, you want to continue living in a familiar environment throughout your maturing years. In fact, according to many surveys, 82% of homeowners overwhelmingly prefer to age in place, which means living in their current homes safely, independently, and comfortably, regardless of age or ability level. With over 30 years of combined experience in residential, commercial, hospitality, and destination resorts fields, Your Home for a Lifetime is a company dedicated to empowering you to maintain your quality of life and independence by helping you make your house your home for a lifetime. Do you want to reorganize or remodel your home? Do you want to add a full bathroom and possibly a bedroom on the main floor? Are you looking to make your kitchen more functional? Is an aging parent moving in, or your child is moving out, or even moving back in? Call Your Home for a Lifetime at 949-492-1872 or check them out on the web at yourhomeforalifetime.com and find out how they can help you make your house your home for a lifetime.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest. Higher.
Okay, so again, for those of us who are joining us right now on the Rad Life today, we have Dr. Josh Luke on the show. And, you know, I love the fact that you actually not are just an author and a speaker, but you're also a healthcare expert, but you're also a futurist. Okay, it appeals to my first degree in economics that, you know, you don't come across a lot of people that are futurists, that actually are willing not only to call themselves that or accept that label, but also willing to put themselves out and say, look, I'm going to think outside the box. I'm going to take a leap of faith. I'm actually jumping off the safety net of what I know, and I'm going to look at better ways of doing things. And so I love the fact that we have a futurist in the studio today. Right? where we left off before the break is we were talking about how, for me, it never made any sense that we have a system that basically encourages you to get to the point where there's no return, where you actually have to be medicated, you have to be given pills, you have to do stuff like that, when really preventive, holistic, you know, wellness, good habits, good nutrition, good ways of basically having a sense of what your family history, for example, is, right? And preparing yourself. Like, you got a history of diabetes in your family? Don't friggin' eat the shit that basically, excuse my French, we are not FCC controlled here, right? Basically, that would cause you to basically be at a higher risk. If you have alcoholism in your family, you know, that, you know, just be aware of these things is actually the responsible way to live your life. And that the medical system, the way it is set up, is really taking care of the situation when the horse is basically out of the barn. You're already sick. You're already, you know, in dire straits. You're already dealing with medical conditions. You know, they call early diagnosis. Why should there be an early or late diagnosis? Should all be early, right? Sure. I mean, awareness, raised awareness, education. And so I want to kick off with that, right? Because I know that some people are trying to at least package their medical delivery systems now as being more preventive,
sure,
more thrive,
sure,
you know, without naming names,
yeah,
right? But is it just packaging?
Yeah.
Or is it genuinely a change that we're experiencing?
Well, so when you say a change we're experiencing, the millennials have lived it their whole life. And, you know, I write a lot on LinkedIn about millennial culture. And if we're not already connected on LinkedIn, follow me at Dr. Josh Luke on LinkedIn, because I share stories like this about everything we're talking about.
Yeah.
I share.
Yeah.
And just really quickly, for those of you who aren't social media enthusiasts, I write stories for LinkedIn's healthcare post and for Forbes. At Pulse and for Forbes.com. But where I've actually grown so much is because I share your stories. I share everybody's stories.
Yeah.
When I read something about wellness, about healthcare affordability, I share it with a comment, a truth filter. And as I travel the country as a professional public speaker, the comments I get when people pull me aside in the hallway and say, can I take a picture or sign my book, are more about the short form, are more about, man, I love that comment you made on that one story because I didn't see it, but you were right. That was the whole point of the story.
Right.
And so short form media is really a great way to grow. But to your question about wellness and what I call healthy lifestyles. So we talked about part one of the book, A System Broken Beyond Repair and the Villains of Greed, and really saying, okay, now I've convinced you we need to blow this system up, which Amazon proved yesterday, right? So now that that's been proven, let's go to step two. Step two is so critical to the conversion that I separated it from step part three, which is 9 steps to financial recovery. Part two of the book is 2 simple concepts: consumerism and healthcare, number one, and number two, what I call a health wealth culture, which is just healthy living. Because the term wellness did get kind of an Eastern medicine, way out there type reputation.
Right.
And so so let's cover part two of the book really quick. Consumerism is becoming an engaged healthcare consumer, an EHC. So when you buy a car, you shop the model, you shop the features, you shop the dealerships for their credibility.
Sure.
You compare prices. When you buy a home, you shop neighborhoods, number of bedrooms, prices, quality, all those things,
yep,
right? Why don't we do that with healthcare? And I'll tell you why. There's 6 words that killed American healthcare. The 6 words that killed American healthcare are this: your insurance will pay for it. Because with all due respect, the folks that used to work for me in the front of the hospital in the admitting and business department didn't have the prices for you, because we didn't want them to have the prices for you, because then you could compare and shop and there would be competition. And we wanted to avoid that, of course. So we trained them to say your insurance will pay for it. And the truth of the matter is, no, you pay for it. You pay for it in next year's premium. Because what happens is everybody else that works for your company chooses the more expensive option as well. And then at the end of the year, it's really a vicious cycle that's factual when you think about it. So every year you're guaranteeing yourself a higher premium for you and your company because you're not engaging in the process. So
right.
So that's what I call...
But there's no incentive to do so.
Well, there is now because they have the high deductible plan.
Right.
So if you want a shortcut on what consumerism is, it's a high deductible plan, but don't stop there and say, oh, they're just costing shifting costs to me, Josh. That's true if you don't engage.
Right.
But my book has several diagrams that show if you do engage, you're actually going to save money and save a lot. In fact, here's a tip. Here's a tip, and if you're driving, don't write this down. Just remember it and look this up on the podcast later to write it down, okay? If it's called a center of excellence, okay?
Yeah.
A center of excellence is a hospital that has just as good a quality as that big shiny one that you want to go to, okay, that's usually in the really good demographic area. But actually, their rates for you and for your company are about 60% less than the big shiny one that's never had to be accountable to anybody, okay? And so when you have to have a procedure, I know I don't want everybody right now to think back in the last 20 years when you've had to have a procedure, you could have chosen hospitals or delivered a baby, okay? If your copay is $1,000 at one or $2,000 at the other, or even $1,000 versus $5,000, because you might think of it as a narrow network or in-network hospital versus an out-of-network, but man, that big shiny one down by the beach where everybody wants to go, and I'm not picking on any hospital in particular.
Yeah.
They just all happen to be by the beach because that's where the money is, right? Whether you're talking about San Diego or San Francisco as well. Okay, but the point is, I want to have my baby there because that's cool, or I perceive the doctors are better there, and they might be, but when you shop a center of excellence consists of two or three things. And here they are. Number one, they have good quality. Number two, they're willing to negotiate with you on the price because they realize you're a valuable asset to them as a consumer. And number three, they're willing to engage you in the conversation. So it's quality, it's price, and it's just communication.
Okay. Where do we find those, Josh?
You go to your HR department and you ask. Or if you're an entrepreneur or a solopreneur, you can call the hospitals or just call your broker and find out which hospital has the better rates. But here's the point I wanted to make. It's a long one. If you choose the center of excellence that's $1,000 less for you as a patient, as a copay, or even $4,000, go to your HR department or your broker and say, hey, will you pay the $1,000 extra if I go to this will you pay my $1,000 deductible as a whole if I go to the center of excellence? Because guess what? It's going to save your employer 20
sure.
grand.
Sure.
20 grand if they're self-insured. So that's a little tip. You can actually get your full copay waived if you're willing to play ball. And your employer will show you that the place you're going actually has just as good a quality.
Well, and you touched on this on one of your podcasts, where you start talking about, I think it was medical tourism.
Tourism, yeah.
Right? And again, living in sort of the wellness and the spa world, and you know, when we talk about medical tourism, in my mind it was always cross country, like you'd go across the border, right? I never thought about it until I listened to your podcast that it could also be county to county. Like I could be looking at stuff in San Diego County, and I'm living in Orange County, that it could actually give me that center of excellence and the benefit on the price point. Now, again, it's California, I understand, but the principle of it is there, is that you being an aware and educated consumer can make better decisions,
absolutely.
So, right? And I mean, it's so common sense, right? I mean, regardless whether we're talking about medical care or we're talking about buying a car, that principle still applies. The more educated you are, the more you're engaged in the process, like you're saying, the more likely you are to make decisions that are best fitting for you, financially and otherwise. So what is it that causes people to not be engaged? Is it that they're overwhelmed with all the other stuff? Do they just depend on that somebody is going to guide them falsely to the best, what is in their best interest? Again, I know we're touching on that broken system again, but it's like, why are people not engaged?
Well, I'm a Gen Xer, and I think if you're a boomer or a Gen Xer, I think we would all agree that the conversation we just had over the last 5 minutes gets back to those six words: your insurance will pay for it. And we never felt like we had a role in it, or if the expense was being passed on to us. I mean, there's not many industries in America where you actually have a third party negotiate on your behalf, like you do in healthcare. So I know you've probably heard this story, listening to some of my podcasts, but let me give you 2 minutes to explain that. So it's your daughter's 16th birthday. She knows what car she wants. She gets her license. She prints out the exact specs of the car. She saved her money. You said you'd pay half. So you jump in the car, dad front seat, mom sitting shotgun, daughter in the back, so excited she can't sit still. You drive down to Auto Center Lane. You come to the stoplight, and there it is on the left. Your daughter says, Dad, there it is right there on the left. The exact car. It's the same color I want, same features. Look at the big yellow and red letters on the window. It says 16,000. And just as she's saying that, mom says, oh, my goodness, look on the right side of the street at this other dealership. There it is as well. Same exact that car, same color, same features, the same radio station that you listen to, but the only difference is the window sticker, yellow and red, says $42,000. So as a dad in the driver's seat, Which way are you going to turn, Dad? Because I know most dads I know are going to pretend like they didn't hear Mom, and they're going to turn left and go to the $16,000 sales guy and say, hey, what's the difference between this car and that car? And he's going to say, we've been asking the same thing for years. But because of those six words in the past, and many of you have gotten handed a blank check by your car insurance in the past as well, if your insurance is paying for it, are you going to turn to the right and say, what's the difference? And spend somebody else's money. So I think that brainwashing and culture, if you will, is what's led to this affordability crisis. And I want to get back to something that you said off air that I know we're going to go to in a minute, because Big Pharma squashed healthy lifestyles and Eastern medicine
and
wellness back in the 50s and 60s. And I love the fact that you brought that up, because in my book, Health Wealth, 9 Steps to Financial Recovery, the 9th step is integrative and naturopathic medicine, which many of you know as Eastern medicine.
Yeah.
And as I researched it, there's a great company out there called Harvey. And their CEO, Kyle Hill, they're out of Santa Monica and Playa, is a friend of mine. He's a fantastic guy, brilliant. And he's the one that said, Josh, go do this research. In America, there was more than 100 universities on Eastern medicine back in the 50s and 60s.
Yep.
Big Pharma came in and squashed them. And you were brainwashed to think that if you're sick, it takes a pill to fix you and to cure you.
Yep.
Which pill is it going to be, Doc? And I really felt a little betrayed once I researched it and learned that. And I know that's the industry you work in.
No,
so
but it's very true.
With
yeah.
It.
No, I mean, it's really funny. You know, I practice medicine without a license. I can't believe I just admitted that on the air, actually. But you know, I tell people, I actually did it today. To a valet guy we're doing work on the Monarch Beach Resort down in Dana Point. And the guy basically was horrible yesterday. He sounded like a bad version of Kathleen Turner, I mean, right? And I said to him, I said, you know, do you use a neti pot? No. I said, well, go get yourself a neti pot. I said, go get yourself some fresh ginger, grate it with hot water, put it in the microwave. You can do it while you're at work, you know. I saw him today. Oh, he did the neti pot. So I jokingly said, so you waterboarded yourself, right? But basically, he was a lot clearer. And it's sort of that maintenance and prevention component that we were denied because we were told. Now, I grew up overseas, so there was still a little bit of that was still filtered through what they called, you know, like almost like, home remedies and old wives' tales and kind of, you know, like things like that. Rub Vicks on your chest kind of thing, right? Those things worked.
Yeah.
And it was it's fascinating that when we became institutionalized in the industrial component of it, pharma killed all of that. All those universities that basically were exploratory in sort of this. I'm not saying that there's no place for traditional for what I would call, you know, like traditional medicine, you know, medication, prescription, you know, procedures, diagnosis. Absolutely, there's a place for it. But we've been kind of told that that's the only thing out there when it's not the case.
Yeah, the recommendation in my book, Step 9, is that, hey, bring it back into the conversation and do both.
Right.
And I loved how you put it earlier, and it's how I've always put it. It's reactive medicine versus proactive medicine.
Right.
And the answer is doing both. One of those. So the book was written to give employers suggestions on how to create a health wealth culture, how to help your employees become EHCs, to become engaged healthcare consumers, whether it's all of your, you know, executives joining a charity board that has a walk or a bike.
I thought that was brilliant, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Walking the talk.
Yeah, talk the talk, walk the walk, and then, you know, putting the right foods and water and liquids in the machines and having a campaign on the wall.
Yeah, get rid of the sodas. Get rid of the, you know, the,
as
the,
I walk
the empty
in here
calories.
With the diet soda, right?
But it's a diet soda. It's okay. But no, I mean, it's true. Yeah. Put, and I'm not saying deny, you know, like be almost like dictatorial about it, but at the same time
enable.
That you have Diet Coke in there or Coke or whatever, then maybe have water, maybe have, you know, something that is healthy as an alternative and not just basically force people in one. I mean, and we know this. I mean, it happens in schools, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it starts early. It's not even at a workplace. It starts with the vending machines at schools.
Mm-hmm.
It starts with the bad nutrition. It's all the empty calories, you know, not really any kind of dietary habits, right? And then it just escalates.
And even a walking club or, you know, some or big organizations work with their community to put bike lanes and sidewalks in and, and all those different things. So the answer is really bringing Eastern and Western back together. And the reason I ordered it in the order I did with the 9 steps to financial recovery is I put it last because I said it's really all these things. You're bringing telehealth and remote monitoring in. You're bringing in DNA testing. And just so a lot of times people go, man, Josh, big ideas, but really, is it going to help me? So let me give you 4 steps real quick. They're all part of integrative and Eastern medicine that you can do to save thousands annually. And guess what? You'll play a part long-term in bringing costs down in America. So the first one's DNA testing. 23andMe kind of unfortunately got us off to a bad start with this 10 or 15 years ago because it was a little bit of a PR nightmare. But DNA testing and the science is real. You get a DNA test, get the printout, take a picture of it, meet with the doctor so he or she can explain to you that these meds work on you and these ones don't. When you take the ones that work, take them at these diagnoses. The doctors will not do that, even if you hand it to them, unless you show them, here's the printout, I only want what works. Because the minute you get discharged to a hospital they're not at, they'll discharge it and change it, and they're all worried about liability. So you have to own it and demand it. So that's DNA testing.
Before you go to the next one, you do realize that what you're saying, and I'm being totally facetious here, right? But what you are saying is that it's not a one-size-fits-all.
Absolutely not.
Right?
And the DNA testing for pharmacogenetics is here and it's real.
Right.
Nutrigenetics, the science isn't as perfect yet, but they will give you a list of foods that they believe to be fuels and a list of foods they believe to be blockers. It's not as simple as fat and calories and carbs as you might think.
No. And it's and your body system, not only just individually, but over the your life changes in how it is basically processes those foods, what benefits it does for your body or not. Your health changes. I mean, this is not I'm being sarcastic about the one size fits all. What you're saying is both on the delivery side, that means that I have to take the time to address each individual situation in a customized manner. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, I just basically blew through the friggin' budget, right? And no economies of scale now, right? Secondly, and more importantly, is you're telling that person, me, you, who is the beneficiary. Okay, you have to be engaged enough to know the particularities of your own situation.
Sure.
Walking in there, not counting on somebody to tell you what you're all about, but having a sense of that, which requires time, energy, commitment, right? And then demanding that what is coming to you is not just the generic approach to something. How does this fit me?
Sure. And I think owning it, and again, it gets back to being an EHC, an engaged healthcare consumer. So you get your DNA printout, and we already talked about both for drugs and nutrition, it can benefit you. Then you go to AI, which is artificial intelligence or machine learning. What does that mean for you as an individual? What it means is you're wearing a Fitbit or something else that's producing data. Use that data. Keep it with you. Learn it. Understand it. Access it to the extent that you can. Telehealth and remote monitoring. I'm trying to learn how to make this point as short as possible, but the days of a mom having to drop 2 kids off at school and keep the other at home, make a doctor's appointment, wait till the doctor can fit you in, sit in a waiting room that's just filled with germs and infections, cancel all of her plans for the day. The minute you adapt to telehealth and remote monitoring, you'll realize that at 7:30 a.m. when you go on your phone and say, hey, doc, I need an appointment, 20 minutes later you do it from your living room and there's a prescription waiting for you, and you don't have to run the kids back and forth or change your plans. That's another thing you can do to save thousands right off the bat. And you might say, well, how do I save thousands? Well, your plan, there's a plan that your employer offers that charges you less per month just for doing that, and there's no copay with most of them.
Absolutely.
And so the fourth thing I would tell you that really simplifies it for folks you already hit on, we need to find a new name besides medical tourism, because the average distance people are, because everybody thinks India, Costa Rica, Mexico, right?
I'm going to go across the border.
Yeah, even though they might be American doctors and the quality is great, we just haven't bought into that concept. The truth of the matter is, a friend of mine, David Contorno, who's a broker back east, had said his data shows that the average distance a person has to drive to find that center of excellence, which we talked about earlier, is only 35 miles, and most of us here in Orange County in particular drive further than that to get to work each day.
Yeah, absolutely.
So 35 miles to save 60% to 80%, that return on investment for you just living those 4 steps is going to be less than a year. And there's all kinds of free assessments at health-wealth.com that you can do. You can get the book there. We're going to have an interactive series pretty soon. You know, I'll tell you, health-wealth.com is really a sense of pride for me, because my goal as America's Healthcare Affordability Authority is just to equip you with the tools to be successful. And I will share with you that this book that just came out is for business.
Right.
It is to give them suggestions on, hey, after 1 year on the job, why not, as a benefit, pay pay for their DNA test. Why not get them? These are two recommendations in the book, by the way. Why not pay for an integrative medicine consultation and follow-up plan as a reward?
Why aren't you rewarding them for being sensitive to your costs basically maintaining a healthy lifestyle?
That's right. And in 6 months in September, you're going to see the release of Health Wealth, Is Healthcare Bankrupting Your Family? And we'll talk more about that when we come back.
Okay, so... go ahead, Paul. You've got a question.
Somebody has been tweeting in a variety of this question here. If the fundamental problem is, I don't care what it costs because someone else is paying for it, and compound that with...
Which, by the way, we're all paying for it.
Yeah, yes. Right. But this perception, like you said, your health care will pay...
I'm not writing a check for it. It's not me.
Right.
Yeah.
The government's going to pay for it. My business is going to pay for it. So my employer's going to pay for it. Somebody else is going to pay for this thing. And this other model that says, that's okay, then under that model, we'll charge as much as we can. We'll run every fee up we can because nobody's checking how much it costs here. And this fee-for-service model that we have, you pay when you need it.
The fee-for-service free-for-all.
Free-for-all. The fee-for-service free-for-all.
Yeah, I should have trademarked that. Well, I could have, because I think it explains it as well as possible. In my last book, Execute, a former hospital CEO tells all, fee-for-service free-for-all is talked about at length.
Versus value-based, which is...
Yeah.
Or preventative based or whatever, where you get an incentive if people are healthy rather than if they're sick.
To answer that question, though, it really comes down to this, right? Are you an engaged person? Is there an empowerment component to what you do with your life? Or are you just basically going along? And I think the interesting thing about the timing is, you know, we're both Gen Xers, okay? I think, like, for my mom to basically tell my mom that she is basically going to basically... that much of like an involved role, as much as she is engaged,
right,
and basically make the call herself versus the doctor.
The doctor's
that's a very terrifying thing to do. For us, we're sort of that bridge, right? But for millennials that are constantly engaged in empowering themselves to make whatever decisions that work for them in the best way, I think the timing is also part of why this is going to maybe have a chance in working, because they're already DNA-wise, if you use the pun, wired that way.
So the question,
this is just another product and a service in a consumer world that they're basically going to need.
So the follow-up question is, if we've got a fee-for-service free-for-all and nobody cared as long as somebody else was paying for it, how do you change that model? Are we all going to have to pay for it and become engaged consumers and therefore be more conscious of being healthy and what it costs when you're sick, and then how are we going to pay for it?
Well, it's more complicated than that. And by the way, whoever's tweeting, tweet me at Dr. Josh Luke. And that's actually a brand new account this week. And I'm at Josh Luke, the number 4 health as well. I'd love to see those tweets when I get back to my phone. So I think of it as of yesterday. This question has a different answer.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So you have the fee-for-service free-for-all, which is history. And by the way, the hospital CEOs aren't big fans of mine anymore because I've said, hey, you're the largest expense in the new model, which is value-based care, which many of you know as Obamacare.
Yeah.
Will value-based care work? I now see it as a transition, which a lot of people up until yesterday were saying, so does this mean we end up in socialized medicine? And the answer is, I don't think so, because you're not bringing costs down. All you're doing is cost shifting to the government or whomever else. When you and I and everybody else becomes EHCs and engages, the costs come way down, and so it's not as big of a deal. Yep. And what will happen eventually to hospitals, and there's a big crisis going on right now because these state hospital associations have been these, you know, money-making machines to represent this big, powerful hospital for years. Now it's the biggest expense in the model, and they're becoming insurers. And so these hospital associations are changing their name to healthcare associations and things like that. The hospitals will merge. They will also merge with companies like Amazon and things like that, because they will become simply a last resort, which the sooner you can get your head around the hospital's a last resort, the better off you'll be. I know the COO of Dignity. I've seen him speak. He's a friend of mine. I present with him. He says, my wife's a nurse. She, by trade, she knows the last place on earth she wants to be is in a hospital.
Really?
So I want to touch on this because I don't want it to be lost in the shuffle.
A couple minutes. You only got a couple minutes left.
We talk about this stuff. And it's almost like it's all in that sector. It's all in that medical health care sector, right? But this permeates throughout every aspect of our life. I mean, it's how we monitor our health, right? Our living quality, our life quality. What part of this conversation
has been a disconnect when it comes to policy, when it comes to implementation of making decisions in areas that may be a higher concentration of seniors. In place, I mean, we live in Orange County. There was an article in the Orange County Register last year that basically said that per capita, Orange County has a higher concentration of seniors than Florida. And in South County, where I am down south, is the largest concentration. So when people aren't leaving their homes, when people are basically, you know, on average, a community says, oh, my average age is about 45, right? That means that there's people that have been living in their homes for over 20 years. They're not moving. They're healthier. Yeah. They're staying in there longer. Sure. To your point, they want to basically have received care in their home. They want to convalesce in their home, maybe, right? Yeah. Aging in place and all those factors, right? Where is the disconnect with those communities from a policy perspective, from those municipalities that are not getting it, that are still operating on an old model?
So you remember being in college or that age where folks go to college and your checking account was always empty? Well, the federal checking account, the Medicare fund, is empty. And this is another point I've been making from the stage for 5 years, and hospital executives just don't like to hear me say that because they know I'm right, and they don't want the rest of the world to know. And for a couple of years, they...
Man, you're losing friends left, right,
yeah, and center. Yeah, I'm okay with it because I'm a truth teller. So I think there is no money to pay for... It can't be justified anymore. And politics seems to be the story of the year since President Trump got elected. But I'll tell you... the healthcare debate in politics has never been about bringing prices down. It's about cost shifting from between corporate America, the taxpayer, you and I, and just coming out of the federal government's budget. There's no money left to pay for it. Medicare, last I looked, is going to run dry the year before I would qualify for Medicare, of course.
And I have to just pipe in because that was one of the disappointments of Obamacare, I think, for many of us. They talked about trying to bring health care costs down. All they did is shift the coverage. One, they offered extended coverage to people who didn't have it. That was good. And then it was a subtle shift, taking it out of businesses and putting in the government role.
And it didn't matter who won, whether it was Trump or Hillary. Costs are going to go up and why. And it's chapter one of this because it's capitalism. We'll use whatever excuse we can to charge you more when there's no transparency. And I always say there's three P's to become an engaged healthcare consumer and reduce healthcare in America. It's actually, there's a fourth P. So the three P's are have a plan based on preventative and personalized medicine. But the fourth plan is work your politician because he or she is getting stroked by the hospital lobby and are giving them everything they want. Let me give you an example. They're trying to move knee and hip surgeries out of the hospital into surgery centers, and there's absolutely no reason that shouldn't be done. It will save thousands, except for the hospitals are going to lose your high-cost business, and they don't want to lose it. Before I forget, guys, I'm honored that the Orange County Register has partnered up with Alzheimer's Orange County, and they're having an event February 22nd at Alzheimer's Orange County.
Jim and Patty,
7 to 9 a.m. I'd love to invite you all down there. We're going to have a panel. It's for the Orange County Book Club. The book of the month for February. In fact, the first 25 folks who sign up at ocbookclub.com are going to get a free copy of Health Wealth bestseller. I think it's got a $24 value on Amazon right now, and I'd love to see all you there.
You're almost sold out on Amazon, so if you can't get it, you better show up for this
event. Really, the audiobook's coming out this week. There's also a Kindle version, and gosh, I'm Orange County for life. I appreciate you guys having me. If you want to learn more, you can catch me on LinkedIn at Dr. Josh Luke. Yep. I mentioned my Twitter handle. A new one is Dr. Josh Luke, but also health-wealth.com is where you can find a lot of that stuff. Thanks for having me.
Paul, you got anything?
I just welcome somebody coming out and saying it that flatly, because it isn't just about who pays for it. It's about what it costs, and nobody seems to be concerned. The government, through its Medicare program, is the only one that does seem, because they put a fixed limit on what the doctors and stuff can charge, right? 10% over whatever the government considers the actual cost to be. And I know that's subject to debate. But and medical practitioners and hospitals hate that because they don't think it gives them enough money.
There's just a morality issue with this, too. It's not just, I mean, and I didn't want to even touch on that because I could just go off on that. I mean, it's not just greed. When my grandfather and grandmother are basically, like in Josh's case, are having a problem making things happen for them later in life, and we're basically being saddled with, you know, oh, my God, I need to get a reverse mortgage because I don't know that I have enough savings to basically live out my life with a quality and dignity that I deserve. Oh, my God, we got a big problem, society.
And the irony is that we have all welcomed the fact that we're going to live longer. So in the same impulse, they've created customers for life. They've created a longer customer base.
Well, two stats for you on that. You know, when Medicare was created at age 65, you qualify. The average length of life for an American was 65.
Right. Why did they take
that
number?
There was no mistake why the number was there.
Yeah, right.
And the other stat I want to throw at you, I can't remember if we said it earlier, that's just so tragic, is that a current projection showed that a millennial will spend 40 to 50% of his or her lifetime earnings on health care in America, and that's tragic. Wow. And I always say tragic with the period, and I pause for impact, because my kids are Gen Z.
Absolutely.
They're all in high school. And if I were them, I would say, I have no interest in health insurance. I'll just go to the hospital if I need it, and we'll figure it out from there.
So, Josh, I'm just going to ask you, I'm going to ask you this, because I'm going to play off the futurist. I want the futurist out for now, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So we are being pushed in this direction.
Yeah.
Not because we consciously are running that way.
Yeah.
We're being pushed in that direction because we got things that are basically becoming bankrupt. We got monies that are running out. We got pressures on the system, right? We have an incoming baby boomer population that's like huge, and basically the needs are outweighing the resources, right? So part of the evolution that we're going through, and it's kind of human nature sometimes, or human history, is by necessity, right? Not necessarily by invention.
We got to fix this thing by necessity.
Right, right. So what, as a futurist, do you see? I mean, I'm a Gen Xer, too. You're a Gen Xer, too, right? We're not that far away from basically being the subject matters here, right? What do you see happening realistically?
I would say for both businesses and individuals, cheer on Amazon, cheer on Apple and Microsoft as they announce these technologies, because they are more influential globally and nationally than the hospitals and the big EMR companies. And I think that by them putting your personal health in your hand through technology, they've done their part. Now it's up to you. And it's not perfect yet. But for Apple to give you an app and to allow the hospitals to, hey, and here's one thing. I mean, Orange County Healthcare, so let's talk about it. We have some great hospitals here,
right?
But they're almost all owned by the same organization now. Providence owns them. So I don't recall Providence being on that list of hospitals that Apple announced has access to their EMR. But let's all put the I know the folks at Providence. I'll email them tonight and say, hey, what can I do to help? Because in Orange County, almost all the hospitals are owned by Providence, and we'd love to be able to own our own healthcare data.
Right, and that consolidation that happened in Orange County actually killed off a few regional hospitals in the process, unfortunately, in areas which there is a high concentration of seniors, where there may be a real, like, that's where the morality factor for me is.
Are you talking San Clemente?
I am talking about San Clemente. Also, that thing is freaking ridiculous, right? I mean, my parents are, I'm being told that it's going to be okay for me to have an extra 5 minutes if they have basically a stroke at home. No, it's not. There's a hospital down the hill. Why is it closed? Yeah. Right. Anyway, I'm glad to see that. You know, I keep reminded by, I went and visited the Rosie the Riveter museum up in Concord, I think it is. And there was a big thing there about the Kaiser boatyards.
Sure.
And the Kaiser system. Yeah. And how that kind of basically came out and was provided to all the workers and stuff like that, right? That was, again, out of necessity.
Yeah.
Right? So this here, what's happening with Amazon, I was thrilled when I heard it yesterday.
Might be the same thing, where they create their own healthcare system.
Well, I was just thrilled because here's the R&D. Here is the innovation, right? Whatever happens, whether they succeed or not, it is a step, just like the Affordable Care Act was a catalyst.
Right.
Okay? In my mind, that was never an end-all. Right, but the way we were going and the things that we were doing were not sustainable.
No, too many people without insurance for one. Yeah,
and I don't know about you, but I don't really groove on the idea that I'm going to get older and I have to deal with all this crap. If there's something we can do about it today,
I am older.
You're 61
I am
years
older,
old,
so and I know that you guys are just going to take care of me, so I feel.
Yeah,
good.
You know, I hear that a lot. You know, let me liken what Amazon and Apple have done in the last week to my perspective on cryptocurrency and Bitcoin. I'm not so focused on the science and the technology as I am that the people who have invested in many ways are my business mentors. Mark Cuban, Bill Gates, the Winklevoss twins. I know for a fact, I'm humble enough to acknowledge that those guys all know way more than me about business and investing. And they are all millions of dollars invested in cryptocurrency. Now, there's one thing I've learned about people who are that successful in business. Their ego is oftentimes more of a driver than their pocketbook, because their pocketbook is fine.
Yeah.
They could lose a few million and not worry about it. And that, I think, was the final straw in me saying, yeah, I'd be willing to invest. And I look at Amazon and Apple, and that's how I'd answer your question. Their ego has now said we can do this.
Uh-huh.
And so they have all the money in the world at Amazon and Apple. We are leaning on them, we being the small group of us that are healthcare truth tellers, to keep going and cheer them on, because until the consumer engages, and let me close with this. I spoke on the same stage from Steve Forbes last 2 weeks ago at a summit in South Carolina, the Authority Summit. It was awesome. I gave my 10-minute TED Talk on all the stuff we talked about today. Become an engaged healthcare consumer. Here's the three P's. Here's four examples, right?
Right.
He got up the next day and did a one-hour speech on finance, a little bit on politics, and about 15 minutes on healthcare. And I will tell you, without using the term three P's, he talked about having a plan that's based on personalized and preventative medicine. He talked about medical tourism localized. He talked about DNA testing. And from across the room, people were giving me like the air high five that were there the day before going, the Steve Forbes is now doing it. And then Apple did it 2 days later. Now Amazon's doing it. It's really not rocket science.
No,
it just
not.
Takes the person that understands it and has studied it to say, hey, and I appreciate you saying, hey, I appreciate the truth teller aspect. That's who I am and what I do. I'm proud to be an OC guy. I'm 714 for life. And you can find me on LinkedIn at drjoshluke.com. Please look me up, connect with me, and let's stay in touch.
You know, the thing that also strikes me is Amazon is a large company with a lot of employees.
Yeah.
Okay, Apple is a large company with a lot of employees. So from a smart business decision, proceeding down this path makes perfect sense. If you were in that position, you'd be doing making
it's your second thing. Largest expense, and it's
exactly.
Your only one that's uncontrolled.
So you control it.
Yeah.
Right.
I got to control this conversation because we've got another show coming up.
Dr. Josh, thank you so much for being
here.
Thanks
for having me.
It's been really a pleasure.
Thank you.
Welcome anytime.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gons, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.